Welcome one and all to episode 404 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, we are back with another albums review. This is for the month of November 2024. Yeah, I know, we're in January. We're about to record the best of 2024 in a few days. And due to technical difficulties, this is coming off today.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
All right, so yeah, so this is an episode a few weeks in the making, just due to various technical difficulties that I was dealing with. From an IT side of things, I have not been able to record this episode until now. I do appreciate your patience and waiting for it to come out, because I know that the millions and the millions out there are clamoring for this fucking episode, all right? No delusions on my end here. Listen, I appreciate those that listen to this podcast all these years later, 2025. Been doing it since 2009. So whoever's here listening, whoever's still out there, thank you. I do want to say thank you to my patrons who have been following and supporting all this time. And I haven't done one of these rundowns of all the patrons in some time. So, you know, I know that in the past there have been people say, well, you don't have to do it every episode. Well, yeah, sometimes I feel obligated to send the shout out to those that support, that keep supporting. I don't only mean from a monetary standpoint, because a lot of these people also support on other fronts, share on social media, so on and so forth. And real quickly here. So we'll go from newest to oldest. Schumacher. And I'm sorry if I'm fumbling that. Sean Richmond, Chris Sinzak, Tony Espin, Anthony Mackie, Ed Ferguson, Johan Edistrom, Metal Dan, Jose Ruiz, Chris Vaglio, Gabriel Ruiz, Brad Dahl, Mr. Yarg Metal himself, Mike Jones, Jeremy Weltman, Steve Hoker, and Steven Saylor. Want to thank all you guys for your support. And like I said, when we get together, the few that do like to come on the show and discuss music and whatnot is very therapeutic. It is very fun. It reminds me of getting hooked on music in the first place. So, yeah. So if any of you want to join us, you can do so for as little as $2 a month. And you can do that on Patreon. It is patreon.com/signalsfrommars. If not, you could just go to signalsfrommars.com. And you can click on all the various links to get to social media, to get to the Patreon, to get to the merch, and other forms of being able to support the podcast. Because I get it, not everyone is into the Patreon. Not everyone is into spending any money. But if you could share it on your social media and let your friends know about the show, that would be great. So yeah, we're going to be doing our countdown of our favorites of 2024. And that will take place this Friday. You still have time to vote. If you want to vote, you could hit me up via any of the social media sites where you usually contact me on, or you could just send me an email, signalsfrommars@signalsfrommars.com. And on that note, again, thank you for listening to this episode. Thank you for dealing with my nonsense all these years. And I realize there are a million and one shows out there, and I appreciate that you still come here to want to listen to me and listen to my guests and listen to what we have going on this show. It means the world to me. Thanks again, and let's get on with the episode. Welcome one and all to the latest edition of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today is Mr. Jeremy Weltman. How are you, Jeremy?
Yeah, hi, Victor. Doing well. Been a tiring week, actually. I've had one or two things going on, but here we are, and hoping to review lots of great albums, as usual. How are you doing?
Awesome. I'm doing good. Tired as well. A lot of different things going on. Still preparing for the weekend and figuring out how I'm going to schedule in a bunch of different basketball games, but that's a different conversation. We're here to talk about albums that were released in November of 2024 to help you guys when it comes to your year-end polls here, or year-end lists that you guys can start to send me. Our 2024 show will be done on January 10th at this point, just due to scheduling, and that way we can get through the month of December, although December doesn't really have much. There's a bunch of reissues and a few things here and there, but the kind of meat and potatoes ends in November, so we're going to discuss that. Anyway, this month had a lot of good stuff. So much so that there are some weeks that I checked out left stuff or I forgot to check out some stuff due to the fact that some of the stuff that did come out was really, really good. Anyway, so on November the 1st, we had new albums from Brothers of Metal, Vola, Bombus, Breadfish, Dead Icarus, Electric Frankenstein, Lifesick, Powerflow, Skillet, Slower, Tribulation, Arctis, Black Denim Rage, an EP from Assassin. So, Jeremy, what did you listen to this week?
Yeah, so I started the month out with sort of brief listens to a few albums. I started off with the Skillet album, Revolution. It's not really the sort of type of band that truly excites me, if I'm honest. There's a lot of generic stuff on this one. But, you know, I had a sort of full-on production. They do it well, I guess. So it was okay. Similarly, the debut album from Arctis, had a brief listen to that one. And if you want sort of unreconstructed, old-style, amateurish thrash, then Chaos of War by Black Denim Rage might be your bag. It was that was okay, you know, nothing special. But I did come upon something a little different. It was the album that you mentioned called Your Blood by Bombus, okay. A metal band that is from, guess where, Sweden, of course. Isn't every band from Sweden now and again? quite unlike any other Swedish band, though, really. I'd not heard much of them before, if I'm honest, maybe in passing, though obviously they've been going quite a while now, since 2010, and this is studio album number 5. They've fleshed out, you know, a bit of a unique sound, really. There's plenty of synths on there, but to good effect, and the vocalist has got a sort of very gravelly voice. There are some sort of 80s goth tones, some Nirvana, traditional rock and roll beats, and doses of sort of post-punk as well, really. Some great melodies, you know, to cap it all off. I mean, it made for a sort of, you know, a really interesting listen. And you know, for the first week of the month, gets me off on a good note. And that's my pick.
Okay. So I got to listen to a bunch of different things. I listened to Loved by None, Hated by All by Lifesick. Got to listen to Powerflow's new album, Guerrilla Warfare. Powerflow has members of Biohazard and Cypress Hill and former members of Fear Factory as well. And it's what you would expect from this band. It's a new metal onslaught. Isn't bad. I listened to some mix between psych and stoner ish music from Slower wasn't bad either. But my pick of the week is also a Swedish band. And as I'm listening to this, I couldn't help but think of our good friend Johan and how he's been on a Cemetery Skyline trip as of late. If you're into Cemetery Skyline, if you're into Typo Negative, Sentenced, Sisters of Mercy, bands of this ilk, gothic metal per se, my pick is Tribulation with Sub Rosa in Atrinum. Let's see if I pronounce this in Spanish. It's Atrenum. Okay. Rosa in Atrenum. Okay. So what it means is more or less eternally under the rose. Basically, I listened to an interview that Chris Aiken just did with one of their members, and really cool interview. And basically in Latin, it means like, everything stays hidden, more or less. Everything stays under the rose forever. So that's what it meant. Again, goth rock, some black metal overtones at time. And I think it's an enjoyable listen. Again, if you like that Cemetery Skyline album or stuff like that, I would definitely check this out. November the 8th, we saw releases from Defenses, Impellitteri, Earthburner, Neil Morse. Let me get the full name in here. One of Neil Morse's million projects. Damn Cell Won't. There we go. Neil Morse and the Renaissance. Paragon. Solstafir. Seventh Crystal. Tungsten. EPs from Delane and Seventh Kingdoms, reissues from 2000 Stab Wounds and Rivers of Nil, and a compilation from Miracle of Sound. Jeremy, what did you listen to on the week of the 8th?
Yeah, the second week of the month. I tried out, obviously, Entity by Seventh Crystal on the Frontiers label. Don't I always listen to all the Frontiers stuff? It's a band that hails, of course, from Gothenburg in, of all places, Sweden again. So, you know, you're going to get a vocalist who can sing. Sure. They've been going now since 2019, actually. They've been playing sort of perfectly listenable, if very somewhat uninspiring, AOR. There's a sort of similar mix here. It's sort of faster tempo, melodic numbers, softer sort of piano-based endeavors on there. Nothing special, but nothing disastrous either. Better, perhaps, was the Grand Inferno by yet another Swedish band, this time the power metal outfit called Tungsten. Look, I mean, if you like power metal, as you know I do, and you don't mind smatterings of Nightwish with some sort of great vocals thrown into the mix, that, you know, there's plenty that will appeal here. The title track is certainly a really good example of these sort of pomp and bombast that will have the listener wielding a blow-up axe and searching out their Swedish heritage on Ancestry.com. I mean, there's a cute little melodic solo in that song. You know, so it's a song that really works for me. It was great. There are other tracks on there worth a listen, including the album closer Angel Eyes, but overall, just probably not enough, really, to, you know, select it as album of the week. For me, album of the week is War Machine by Impellitteri. It's the band's 12th full studio release since they formed in the late 80s, I think. I mean, it's a band that's had, you know, as you know, so many members, but I think they're still delivering the goods. The opening title track really sets the tone for me on this one. You know, you're treated to very sort of classic metal, heavy, fast-paced riffs, great vocals. It's the sort of album I would really actively seek out, you know, if I didn't know the band. It's the music I really like. It's ballpark metal. It sort of appeals to a broad cross-section of fans. It's very well produced. And in many ways, it's the kind of music that sort of epitomizes the mainstream heavy metal genre, you know, built with sort of on layers of influences, I'd say, you know, and it works very well. Obviously, it's a path well trodden, but for me, it's easily album of the week.
Okay. So I listened to some of the death metal leanings of Earthburner and their album Permanent Dawn. I also listened to Metalation from Paragon, and I would recommend checking that out, especially if you're into the whole power metal thing. I think there's some good stuff there. I would say it's kind of a mix of Priest with some other stuff. I mean, nothing new there, but entertaining at times. But my album of the week is War Machine by Impellitteri as well. I've been a fan of theirs since Stand in Line. And this is a really good, solid album, beginning to end.
Yep.
Again, nothing new being traversed here, but there doesn't have to be anything new. It's just good. It just sounds good, and it's great beginning to end. So.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Okay, so we have the 14th, or no, the 15th of November. We had new albums from Zebrahead, Voodoo Circle, As I Lie Dying, Empire of Eden, Less Than Jake, Linkin Park, Lionville. Is it Lionville or Loinville? I think Lionville would probably make more sense, but I think I misspelled it here. Poppy and Star Chaser, reissues from Steel Panther, Iron Maiden Power Slave, which is right there. That is the reissue. Sodom and Trapeze. And we have a live album from John Wetton from Asia Fame, and compilations from Wasted Youth was also released. All right, Jeremy, how about you for this month? Or for this week, excuse me.
Yeah, so my album of the week is Power Slave, and that's all I'm going to say. No, I was joking. I was joking. Obviously, we can't pick that one. It's an old one, but a favorite of ours. I started out actually listening to the multiple artist project Empires of Eden with the album titled Guardians of Time. I didn't realize they've now done 5 studio albums. And as you kind of might expect, it's a sort of, you know, a good mix of fairly well-written songs, had sort of different angles to it. There's various players and vocalists on here. And overall, I'd say it was, you know, it was a pleasant surprise. There was some sort of great melodic metal. It spans, you know, a few genres as well, even though it's kind of grounded in power metal. The tracks that are, you know, that are a bit so-so are, you know, a fairly few than the listenable ones. There's a slight downside for me, though. The production is so powerful and in your face that the vocals have been a little bit pushed too far forward. It suffers slightly from that, and it sort of gives you the impression the band weren't in the same room recording it, which I'm assuming was the case. That's a shame, because if it had been recorded in one studio or even live and sort of slimmed down maybe from 12 songs to 8, it would be, you know, a real treat of an album. I then sort of quickly found my album of the week. So I'm only going to mention 2 in this particular week, and it's Hail the King by the German band Voodoo Circle. Okay. I guess it's sort of, you know, as close to a new Whitesnake album as you're ever going to get. You've got that sort of David Coverdale-esque vocals of David Reedman. You know, he's a Lancashire lad from Burnley, not far from me, really. He's featured in Tank, as you know, and Pink Cream 69 and Adagio, among all his other ventures. He's a good singer. This is good mainstream metal rock. You know, it's got those sort of soaring Whitesnake melodies, buttressed by some, you know, sort of chunky, sizzling guitar playing, John Sykes style, Joel Hoekstra style, all that sort of stuff's there. I mean, they ain't inventing the wheel, but, you know, we say that a lot about a lot of albums now, obviously, because, you know, we're hearing a lot of stuff over the years. But they are producing really enjoyable music, and if you're like me and you're partial to a little bit of Coverdale, a little bit of Whitesnake, it's clutching, pumped power metal. And I liked it. It's my album of the week.
All right. Awesome. Okay. So I started listening to the new album from Zebrahead. It's a little of everything. There were a few tracks back in the day that I enjoyed of theirs. Probably their most famous song is a cover of Real Life's Send Me an Angel. I listened to the new Linkin Park album from Zero. And I have to say, it's better than what I expected, because the last few albums by the band with Chester in the lineup just didn't do a whole lot for me. I wasn't really expecting much from it and was surprised. Yeah, there's some poppy commercial type music on here, but it's heavier than what I expected. It's got some catchy melodies, so I enjoyed it. Speaking of poppy, Poppy's Negative Spaces is my album of the week. Huge fan of hers. I think that she offers up a great mix of a lot of different genres, from straight up rock to straight up metal to screamy stuff within metal to just full on pop. So she gets away with a lot of stuff and she tends to do it fairly well. So my album of the week is Poppy with Negative Spaces. All right, let's move on to November 22nd. We had new albums from Marilyn Manson, Opeth, Crossbones Scully, Distant, Sunstorm, Sirachi, 10,000 Years, Die for My Sins, Myrrh, Body Count, and EPs from Xandria, I guess that's pronounced. Reissues from Judas Priest, their Rock and Roll 50th Anniversary, Marillion, The Strange Engine, Nothing More with Nothing More 10th Anniversary Edition, Tigers of Pantang with Animal Instinct. So, Jeremy, outside of those reissues, what did you listen to?
Well, I started the week listening to something on the Ripple Music label. I used to listen to a lot of stuff, and I've bought quite a bit on that label. I haven't listened to anything for some time. So I listened to All Quiet on the Final Frontier by 10,000 Years, which is a band actually from, guess where? Sweden.
Wow.
This is actually better than I was anticipating. It's all sort of fast-paced stoner with some great rhythmic riffing on it. The song High Noon in Sword City in particular has a sort of cult-style groove, which I liked. It doesn't overstay its welcome either. There's just 8 songs on the album. It's a very worthy 34 minutes of my life spent, proving too, I might add, that Sweden does every type of rock and roll really well, as we've kind of proved tonight even by mentioning Sweden so many times. And finally, a little mention too for their mighty fine arty album cover. So yeah, gets all the thumbs up for me, that one. I moved on to the comfortable bedfellow of classic hard rock with former Crocus singer Mark Starace's album Crossfire. The Maltese-born Swiss frontman you would think might branch out a bit by now, but no, it's another AC/DC style effort that made his band famous. But hey, who doesn't like an AC/DC style romp? We all do, don't we? The song Love Thing Stealer is so AC/DC, and not just the title. You'd be really forgiven for thinking it's not a new song by the band, really. It's so AC/DC. But you know, as we've said, I think before, if it's good enough for Airborne, it's good enough for Starace or any other band that tries to copy them. And this isn't really an album that's going to be defined by overanalysis. It's, you know, it's just punchy. The production is full. You can hear every word he sings. I mean, let's be honest, we ain't reinventing the wheel on this one, as we aren't on many others, but it's a perfect listen on a long road trip. It's a, you know, decent hard rock stuff there. The third one is an album called Scream, by a band called Die for My Sins. Fairly new band, I think, founded by Fabio and Nicholas Caluari of Heimdall. It also has Ralph Sheepers on this, sharing vocals with Ian Parry. So, I think it's worth a listen for most of the listeners out there. And, it's got a real balance of melody and heaviness on this album. It does sound a little bit like Primal Fear, you know, with those sort of Judas Priest overtones, but it's a nice listen overall. And I'm kind of in between here, but I'll probably plump for, you know, the Starace one maybe as album of the week.
Okay. So similar to the Starace album, you have the Crossbones Scully album featuring Tommy Hendrickson, who is best known for his work with Alice Cooper, although he was in Warlock many, many years ago. Full on AC/DC. I mean, beginning to end. I listened to the new Opeth, The Last Will and Testament, and I've never been a huge Opeth fan. There's some songs of theirs that I really like, but for the most part, I just don't get them. It's an okay album. I know that some people are shaking their fists at me right now, but just kind of didn't grab my attention. I also listened to the 10,000 Years album. I thought that was pretty good. It was different than what I had expected. Listened to the new Body Count, Merciless, and I have to say I was disappointed with that one. I'm a huge Body Count fan. Their last few albums have been really, really, really good, and this one kind of falls short. I think the lyrics also kind of just tend to be kind of over-the-top horror-type lyrics, and they kind of lose me a little bit. Whereas the stuff that kind of grabs me from Body Count is sort of the more rebellious, you know, angst against the system type deal. But anyway, my album of the week is Marilyn Manson's One Assassination Under God, Chapter 1. For everyone that is saying, oh, this is Manson's return to, return to form. It's their best album since Antichrist Superstar. I know people that have been saying that with every single Manson release since. It is a very good album. It is strong. I really like it. And I've liked it since the first few singles that I heard off of the album. And to be honest with you, I thought it, I had ordered this on vinyl. And this week, as I was scanning albums into my Discogs, I noticed that the Manson album that I picked up, and I thought, oh, I've got a limited edition copy of the new album. And as I'm scanning it into Discogs, I realized that it's actually The Pale Emperor. So this is a reissue from an album from 2015, and the shop where I bought it ordered the reissue instead of the new album. So kind of my mess up as well, where I should have noticed it in the store. But anyway, if you're remotely a Marilyn Manson fan, check this album out. It is really good. So the final week in November, November 29th. Now, just so you guys know, this is Thanksgiving holiday, and as I mentioned before, a lot of companies stop releasing music. They'll release compilations, live albums, greatest hits, stuff like that, just because that's what a lot of people buy for the holidays, if they buy anything at all. So there's a short list of releases here, whereas the 22nd had a lot of new stuff. So we have new albums from Fire Action, The Gates of Slumber, Shining, The Watcher, Demon Bitch, and Hellfire 76. We have an EP from, I don't know if this is pronounced SAG or if it's, SAHG, or how exactly this is pronounced. But anyway. They released an EP called More of Nothing. What did you listen to this week, Jeremy?
Yeah, so just a couple for you. I tried out Master of the Games by Demon Bitch, which was, you know, a fairly balanced offering between the sort of genuinely enjoyable and the outright ridiculous. it's all sort of old school fun from the Detroit, Michigan band. That's, you know, they play sort of new wobbum and speed metal styles in fairly equal measure. This sort of very trouser tightening high pitch vocals, the sort of thing I guess that my teenage self enjoyed back in the day, but just a touch amateurish and dramatic to be a must listen, I'd say.
Okay.
I mean, moving on, I moved on to Rags to Rage by Hellfire 76, a band from Charlotte. that sort of kind of combines a lot of elements, really. Some stoner, some doom, southern rock and roll, you know, bits of metal. You know, there's some deep and heavy riffing on this, a sort of great tempo. It's their first full-length record, by the way. It's not, you know, it's not the most fantastic music, but it does remind me a little bit of Clutch.
Okay.
It certainly has a few tracks on there that are worth turning up, and I think it could also be, you know, a bit of a grower. So that's the one I'm going for.
Okay, cool. So I got to listen to the hard rock leanings of Fire Action and their album Until the Heat Dies. This is on Steamhammer SPV. This could easily be on Frontiers, to be honest with you. Not terrible, but not sure that it's something that I would reach for in the future. Listen to Out of the Dark from The Watcher, which is on Cruz del Sur. Cruz del Sur, the Southern Cross, basically. Again, stoner leanings, not bad. Stonery doom, however you want to look at it, not bad. Not anything new, but the one that got me is the EP, More of Nothing from SAG. Again, this is a band that's consistently put out entertaining heavy metal. There's always something on each one of their releases that I enjoy, and this album or this EP is no different. Out of given all the choices, this is what I'm going with here. So just to recap here, let's see. You went with Bombas for the first week. I went with Tribulation. Second week of November, we both went with Impellitteri. The third week of November, you went with Voodoo Circle, and I went with Poppy. The fourth week, you went with the Starace, I went with the Marilyn Manson. And for the final week of releases in November, you went with Hellfire 76, and I went with the SAG album. Cool. So, folks, look back at all of the episodes that we've done, Jeremy and I, throughout the year. If you're not sure as to what music to check out or what may make your top 10 list for the year, you've got almost a month before we do the countdown. You've got about 3 weeks to submit your lists. And I know somebody who's on the show outside of me who's already submitted their list. But anyway, let's talk about some other points that some other interesting topics that we've been going back and forth with the last week, the last few days. And all right, so probably the biggest news could be considered the biggest metal news of the year. I mean, we've waited all the way till the end of the year for this to happen, but farewell to Nico McBrain, who is leaving Iron Maiden now. Well, he's leaving the touring side of things. So that the way that they've kind of described it is kind of interesting, because there's two things that I want to bring up. One, you saw them last year with Nico, and you mentioned that you already sensed that something was wrong, that he wasn't playing the parts as he had in the past. That's one thing. The second thing is, does this mean Nico will continue to record with them? Will he, you know, record a track or two maybe with the band and their new drummer, who, you know, I should be better prepared here. I don't have his name. But he's got all types of credentials. You know, he played with The Outfield for a very long time, which is a pop rock band. He's played in a band, you know, in a in the 90s. He was in a full-on metal band. He's played in a bunch of different bands over the years.
And he's in Steve Harris's band and now, isn't he?
He's in Steve Harris's band, which is when this first came up. I mentioned they're either picking him without knowing his name. So his name is Simon Dawson. And I said, it's either going to be him or somebody who's been in one of Steve's kids' bands. No. So the interesting thing is they're showing him with a six-piece kit, which I'm assuming that for Iron Maiden, he will expand that to be able to play some of these songs. At least you would think, you would hope that he would follow the kind of aesthetics that the band is known for with both Clive and Nico. Haven't seen a bad thing about Nico from anyone. And interesting how coming out of the woodworks have been a lot of different musicians from different genres of rock music praising Nico and for how nice he is and stuff like that. So it's always very cool to see.
Yeah.
But, what's your take on this, and what's your take on Simon Dawson replacing him?
Yeah, well, initially I was a little bit saddened by it because obviously, you know, he's been in the band for so long. I've only really known him as a drummer for, you know, since the early, very early days. He, you know, he's been on every album, hasn't he, since Number of the Beast onwards or whatever. So,
Peace of Mind.
Yeah. Sorry, Peace of Mind. Sorry, yeah, exactly. Yeah, came in then, and then since then he's been on every album. Well, I mean, what can you say? You know, he's forged a great rhythm section with Steve over those years. He's added a bit of fun. You know, he does seem like a fun character in the band. So he's going to be sorely missed. But as you say, you know, I saw them last year, and I noticed. I mean, I didn't know at the time that he'd been ill. And I noticed that his playing was very, very limited. It looked like he wasn't performing. I mean, I'm not a drummer either. You know, I'm not a real drumming guy. I'm more into guitars. But you can tell when someone's not right. You know, he was surrounded by all this sort of perspex, so he could hear everything properly. He was sort of shielded from the rest of the band, and he wasn't really doing much. Which, you know, normally, you know, he's quite expressive, let's say, on the drums.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's the oldest member of Iron Maiden, so it's to be expected. He's been ill. He's had the stroke. He can't do it. To answer your question earlier, will he record with them? Yeah, I think that's possibly, you know, it's open to him to do that. Maybe he won't do everything, but it'd be a little bit like Judas Priest with Glenn.
Right.
You know, he may well contribute stuff and say what needs to be done, and he may well be able to do it in private rather than doing it in the live situation, mm-hmm. because he can go over and over what he's doing and make it more perfect. So yeah, I think, you know, listen, at the end of the day, that he's made the right decision, because you can't go on forever. None of these bands are going to go on forever, mm-hmm. and rather than the band folding, you know, they've decided to go on without him. As for the choice of, you know, new drummer, Steve's working with someone he's happy with. He's already working with him. And as you know, bassists and drummers have to work together. Mm. And so if he's happy working with this guy, he wants to do it with him, you know, in Maiden, and feels that he can, you know, meet the challenge of doing Maiden, which will be a bit more of a challenge, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing you brought up, Glenn Tipton.
Yeah.
So they're saying that Nico is stepping away from the touring side of things. Again, does it mean that he's going to record stuff with them? Does it mean that he could show up at some festival and play with them?
You know, you've raised something there. Yeah, that's
similar to Glenn. Yeah. Yeah, because being that it's the 50th anniversary of the band, they're going to be playing music from a lot of those albums that he was on. You know, so all the way, they're going to be playing from the first album up to Seventh Son. You know, could he show up at they're not playing Download, but, you know, could he show up at some, you know, big event in the UK, something big in the States, you know, where he turns up and, and I don't even know if they could announce, hey, you know, with Nico on drums, you know, for this show, or, you know, I don't know. I would assume that that may draw some people to say, hey, you know, this is going to be our last time where we're going to see him. Let's check him out. I don't know.
Yeah, or whether he might play with the new drummer, you know, they might have two people on stage at once doing a little bit of drumming during one of the tracks or something. I don't know. It seems to me as if he wants to sort of cut ties completely in terms of live performances. Mm-hmm. And you can understand it, you know, he's had an illness that makes it probably harder to drum than it does to play Living After Midnight. You know, me and you can play Living After Midnight, and I'm not a great guitarist, but, you know, I can play a few chords, and, you know, I can do that on stage, and that's easy for Glenn because it's in his DNA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he doesn't have, you know, even with his Parkinson's disease, he can actually play those few chords, and he's playing with two other guitarists, and so they could easily turn him down if he wanted to. With a drummer, it's a bit different, I think, you know, especially if he's doing it on his own.
Right.
I don't know. I think we're just going to have to say if he does come out, it's great. You know, it will be fantastic to see him again. If not, he's going to be doing tours as a drum technician, you know, selling himself as, you know, a drum instructor and, you know, going to these drum shows and all that sort of stuff. And it'd be nice to see him around to that.
Yeah. Okay.
He doesn't owe anyone anything.
Yeah. No, absolutely doesn't. All right. Jeff Tate, on the heels of our Queensrÿche discussion a few weeks back, Jeff Tate will release a single at a time over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
So this is kind of interesting because this is what Smashing Pumpkins did, not with their latest release, but with the album that they put out before. And they abandoned the concept completely for this new album. And interestingly enough, I've been posting a lot of videos to Patreon for this coming week. And a lot of my comments were, hey, this is a standalone single. Hey, this is a standalone single. I don't know when a new album is coming out. There's no news on any full length coming out. So, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I get it. Why he would do something like that. And there are some bands that I think should only sell things in this fashion or release things in this fashion. But what do you think?
Yeah, it's a little bit strange in a way, because I think he mentioned recently he was going to record the new Mindcrime album, didn't he?
Right.
Mindcrime 3 as well. So I don't know what he's planning to do, really. Are these tracks off that particular album? Are they something different? I don't like it in terms of, I like to, I mean, we have a show here, which is about albums of the week. You know, we listen to albums still. We're a little bit old school. We like to hear a whole album and judge the best songs ourselves and hear them from front to back. And I don't like it when these bands sort of release, you know, the odd song here or there, or even one after the other now and again. I want to hear the whole thing.
Right.
But I get it. It's a different way of doing it. It might be, you know, it might be good if they're great songs, because you're going to look forward to them. On the other hand, what happens if he releases a dud one and you've got to wait another month for the you know, the one you really want to hear?
Right.
I don't know. I'm holding out judgment on it. I'm not entirely sure what I think of it. Until he starts releasing them, really. But it's not my cup of tea. It's not what I want to hear from a band or a recording artist.
Okay. So next up, I'm trying to figure out dates here. All right, so... Okay, I guess there aren't official dates, but anyway. All right, so there's been a new festival announced, Boardwalk Rock, which is May 17th and 18th in Ocean City, Maryland, which is fairly close to where M3 is taking place every year. Okay. So The Saturday lineup is Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Hailstorm, Bush, Chevelle, Flyleaf with Lacey Sturm, The Struts, Extreme, Everclear, wow, Puddle of Mud, Trapped, Kat Von D, and Royal Lynn. Sunday is Nickelback, Shinedown, 3 Days Grace, Alice Cooper, Three Doors Down, Bret Michaels, Candlebox, Night Ranger, Crossfade, Dorothy, Blackstone Cherry, Fuel, Saliva, and Tim Montana. M3 hasn't announced dates yet, and they haven't announced who's going to be playing either. My whole thing here is because M3 is usually in May, if I'm not mistaken. My whole thing is this going to detract from M3 having this festival being the same month, same state, fairly close? I mean, M3 takes place at, oh man, I can't find it now. Anyway, it also takes place in Maryland, as I'm saying. Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. And this is in Ocean City, Maryland. So I wonder, let's see on Google Maps here. Yes, folks, this is the most exciting part of the show as we research stuff.
I could sing a tune, but I can't.
Columbia, Maryland.
So these shows are going to be a similar time, you're saying?
Yes.
As well as being in the same venue. Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting one, isn't it? They've obviously gone for direct competition, which is strange. If not, you know, a kind of American way of doing things, but, you know, why would they do that? And, you know, they're going to dilute the fan bases for M3, which, you know, is quite a well-established festival, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Certainly one that we know one or two of your patrons go to.
Yeah, yeah.
Regularly. Friends and patrons go to M3. Yeah, it's a bit weird. They've obviously gone for some, decent schedule in there as well. You know, there's some great bands on.
Right.
So it's definitely attractive. You know, we've bemoaned Def Leppard on here in terms of their studio stuff, but, you know, live act, fantastic.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to see Def Leppard live? And many other bands that you've mentioned there.
Mm-hmm.
Very attractive thing to go to. I'd be interested to know in the cost as well, whether they're very competitive on the prices, because that will make will have a bearing to the rock fan who wants to go. There will be some who want to go to both, of course.
Oh, wow.
If they can.
Yikes. 2 days. Whoa.
Yeah.
2 days. General admission starting at $240.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
What are 1 day tickets? $165.
Yeah. Have we got any feeling? Yeah, go on.
No, I was going to say, which is what a 2 day festival usually costs in Europe.
Yeah.
$165.
Yeah. Have you got any feeling for M3 prices in comparison?
I think they're cheaper.
Cheaper, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It sucks to me. I've seen so many festivals fall apart because similar things to this have happened, where somebody comes in, sets up, same demographic, few hours away. I mean, there's basically a 2.5 hour difference from one place to the other. One is close to, I guess it's in between Washington and Baltimore. And the other one is Ocean City, which is on the coast. But yeah, schedule it a different time, I would say. But you know, who am I?
Well, it's definitely one to monitor next year and see what happens really in terms of, you know, who goes and what they think about it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's one that you sent to me. Uriah Heep to play shows after a farewell tour. So this is kind of like what I mentioned about Nico. Well, he's going to stop touring. Well, Uriah Heep is doing their farewell tour, but they're not going to stop playing shows. So it looks like they're going to continue to do one-offs here and there, maybe a festival date here and there. At least they're upfront about it. That said, they shouldn't label this a farewell tour. Yes, I get it. They're saying goodbye to touring, but at the same time, they're still going to be playing shows. And in the greater scheme of things, you know, I think that they'll trick more than one person into going to see them as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this has happened so many times. I mean, I've been on the Motley Crue farewell tour. I've been to the Kiss farewell tour. I've been to the Scorpions farewell tour. I've been to the Thunder farewell tour. And every one of these bands has then gone back out on the road. And I've bought the T-shirt. I've been to the farewell show because I wanted to see them one last time. And it's becoming annoying. I mean, I like Uriah Heep and I like the guys in it. I think they're nice guys. They play genuine music. They want you to go and have a good time. They don't overcharge you. They've been going since the year dot, you know, so they've built up a fan base and they're very enjoyable music. But I don't know, it's probably not them. It's probably their promoters. You know, the promoters do it on purpose to get people to go bums on seats. And then they turn around and say, oh, no, we're not finishing. It's just, you know, it's a farewell tour. It's just daft. It's daft, but it's marketing and we ain't going to see the end of it. There's going to be more bands who are going to do it after them. I just wish they'd stop it and just tell us if it is the very last tour.
Yes, I agree with you. Category 7, band made up of Phil Demmel, formerly of Machine Head and Violence, Adrenaline Mob guitarist Michael Orlando, Jason Bittner of Shadows Fall, who just left Overkill, and Jack Gibson, who is known for his work in Exodus. And oh yeah, their lead singer is John Bush, formerly of Anthrax and currently Armored Saint, has canceled their spring tour. Interesting, because there was going to be support from bands that I've interviewed. So for example, Dead by Wednesday, Opus, and Engineered Society Project, who I've had Chris the singer on the show several times over the last few years. So that kind of bums me out. And I have the Category 7 album right here. Anyway. Yeah, so what's annoying to me about this is that for years, people are clamoring to hear John Bush revisit his Anthrax material. This is a project where he was going to be doing that. And no more.
Oh.
It's interesting to see what Category 7 will do now. Because obviously they haven't, you know, no one's selling lots of copies of anything now unless you're Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
and they're saying that, you know, ticket sales were so poor that they were going to barely break even.
Right.
Some of the shows.
Right. So can I chip in and ask, when were these shows about to be going live? When were they going live?
It's March 5th through the whole month of March.
Right. So, yeah, my immediate thought about that is that a lot of punters now are buying tickets late for shows. I think a lot of promoters say that as well. So I think the promoters don't want to stick their necks out because they think, well, if they haven't sold a certain amount that in their, you know, that they need to sell at this stage, then that's when they cancel it. But
right.
I've heard that, that this is happening a lot with, because there's so many concerts now, especially for next year. I think 2025 is quite a cramped, you know, it's very cramped, you know, crammed with concerts all the way through the first half of the year. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know how much the tickets were, and you know, there's so much competition, so much.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much the tickets were either.
Yeah, and people are delaying stuff. You know, there's you know, it's getting to Christmas as well,
right?
And you know, that's the sort of show that people would start to buy in January, February, I think. But they're not willing to hold out. You know, they're not willing to hold out and think, well, it'll be half full.
Right.
They need to have some ticket sales up front, don't they?
Yeah. And that's kind of the argument where I've seen from some people saying, hey, you know, this is proof that you need to buy tickets ahead of time. You can't just rely on walk up. But speaking of cramped, 184 bands have been announced for Hellfest 2025, taking place between the 19th and 22nd of June. And let me go over some of these bands. So on the main stage for Thursday will be Korn, Rammstein, lead singer Till Lindemann, Airborne, Apocalyptica, and Skindred. Stage two, Electric Callboy, Kim Dracula, 7 hours after Violet, which is Shavo from System of a Down's new band. You have Helicopters and Turbo Negro on another stage. Then you have Orange Goblin, Monkey 3 on another. Yet on another stage is Ginger, White Chapel, Fit for an Autopsy. Then finally on the Temple stage, you have Alcest, Sunno, and Ishan, amongst other bands. Friday, June 20th, main stage is Muse, The Who, The Cult, The Warning. Stage two, Within Temptation, Epica, Spirit Box, Kitty, Charlotte Wessels, and Sun. Warzone stage, Sex Pistols with Frank Carter, The Damned. Valley stage, Masters of Reality, Pentagram. Russian Circles is the headliner, okay. Altar stage, Exodus, Sacred Reich, Tankard, 3 Inches of Blood, Nervosa, Burning Witches. That's an interesting lineup there. Tempo, Temple stage. I guess In Extremo is the only one that I kind of know. Main stage is Scorpions. And another combo that I was going to discuss, Satriani and Steve Vai.
Oh, yeah.
Black Country Communion, Miles Kennedy, Tremonti. That's interesting. They're playing by themselves, one after the other. I wonder if they do any Alter Bridge songs together. See, main stage two, Judas Priest, Dream Theater, Savatage, Ross the Boss, Warzone stage, Turnstile, Terror, Stick to Your Guns, Nasty, Valley stage, Conan is the only band that I know off of this. Alter stage, Haken, Vola, Persephone. So those are all progressive metal bands. Temple stage. Yeah, this is all extreme metal. Then Sunday, June 22nd, Linkin Park, main stage one, Linkin Park, Cypress Hill, Refused, Eagles of Death Metal, Dead Poets Society. Main stage two, Falling in Reverse, A Day to Remember, Motionless in White, Lorna Shore, Poppy. Warzone stage, Knocked Loose, Walls of Jericho, Gorilla Biscuits, Valley stage, Jerry Cantrell, Kylisa, Prayers, which is actually Kat Von D's husband's band, Altar stage, Death Clock, Cattle Decapitation, and the Temple stage. On to others, Priest. And that's about it that I know on that. So 184 bands. There's a lot more that I didn't mention. Speaking of cramped.
Yeah.
As I was going to mention that Steve Vai and Joe Satriani will launch a band called Satch Vai Band, announcing the Surfing with the Hydra European Tour, where for the first time they will share a band and they will be flip-flopping songs back and forth.
That'll be a guitar-gasm.
Absolutely. Does Hellfest or even that Vine Satriani package interest you?
Listen, Victor, if that Hellfest doesn't interest you, this is not the show for you, because there's so many bands on there for everyone.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, there's big name bands, there's a load of small bands we've not heard and we'd love to, you know, check them out. Mm-hmm. There's so much stuff on there. I mean, I don't care how much that costs. It could be within a range. There's obviously so much you're willing to pay, but it's fantastic. It's really fantastic what they're doing. You know, there's so much good stuff. The only thing you can hope for is good weather, and it's not going to be an absolute downpour that puts you off. you mentioned bands like The Damned and The Cult and Judas Priest and Scorpions and a whole host of others. I mean, it's just fantastic. It's great to see all that super music all on in the one venue day after day. It's a dream. And unfortunately, I guess it's sold out pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. It's already sold out. Sold out right after the last.
Yeah. I mean, the organizers of Hellfest should invite me and you free of charge, because we will give them a 2-hour show live on that Friday night, live from the show. I'm putting it out there now. If they want to do that, send us the tickets. We will come. We're very polite. We'll we won't diss any of the bands. We'll just give it a nice review and 2-hour show. What do you reckon, Victor? You can do that, can't you?
We can do
that. set all that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. interesting here, though, is that Scorpions gets billing over Priest.
Yeah. I don't know why that would be, especially with Judas Priest releasing a fairly decent album this year. I don't want to go over the top too much, because we've got our end year review of the albums coming up, and we don't know where it's going to end up. But that is a bit weird. But Scorpions are very popular in Europe.
True.
Where is Hellfest? Is it Germany?
It's France.
It's France, right. Okay, so it's only next door. Yeah, it's next door. So maybe, you know, they're probably very, very popular there.
Next door to both.
True. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, well, I don't know why that is. It normally for these sort of things, they do it on album sales or they do it on, you know, what they've done in shows. They've got some data behind it. I know they do that at Download.
And I'm sure they do the same thing here. This is a much heavier lineup than Download, even though...
Yeah, yeah. It's more old school. It's more old school, isn't it? It's a little bit more old school, because it's, you know, there are bands there which aren't playing now at Download because,
Yeah, and besides that, I mean, like you said, there's a little of everything, because on Sunday the 22nd, you do have Linkin Park and Cypress Hill, for example.
Yeah.
But Download had Sleep Token, Green Day, and I don't remember who the third headliner was.
No, I don't.
Off the top of my head. But, I mean, you look at the headliners here, pretty much all of them are heavier than those three. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Real quickly before wrapping up here and talking about some anticipated tours and albums, the Heavy Metal Hall of Fame has announced their inductees this year, which include Dimebag Darrell, 20th anniversary of Life Celebration induction, Alissa White Glues of Arch Enemy, Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein with the Misfits. Yeah, those two are a pair. They're dating. They have been for years. Ricky Rocket, excuse me, of Poison, KNAC, Burton C. Bell of Fear Factory, Dangerous Toys. If you haven't checked out my latest interview with Jason McMaster, the audio version is up now. And finally, Jeff Young of Megadeth and Kings of Thrash. Jeremy, what do you think of the Heavy Metal Hall of Fame and that lineup that they're inducting this year?
Yeah. What do I think of it? I think of it probably what, you know, some of the artists have said of it over the years. You know, it's these sort of things, you know, that they're good in some ways because they highlight, you know, bands or artists that are good in that genre and that should be awarded and you know, talked about. But on the other hand, it kind of passes me by. I mean, I don't really take much interest in it, really, apart from the fact that it might make me listen to, you know, a little bit of the music. I listened probably about a year or so ago to Dangerous Toys, and now you've mentioned them again, you know, I might sort of go away and listen to them because they're a great band.
Right.
I don't know who else is in there. You know, I can't remember who else is who has been inducted before. I can't remember who hasn't been inducted. Mm-hmm. I just know that list that you've just given me for this year. And I think, well, I'm happy for them, but it doesn't really affect me. It's not something that, you know, I think about from day to day. I'd rather just listen to the music.
Okay. All right, so let's wrap things up here talking about anticipated tours and albums for 2025. Any tours or albums that you are looking forward to?
Yeah, well, we've mentioned Uriah Heep. I'm going to see that one. I thought it was going to be the final tour, but still looking forward to seeing them live. I've got tickets for that. I've got tickets for Iron Maiden. It'd be lovely to see them again next year. They're going to do, you know, big show for their anniversary. Hoping to see, or I've actually got a ticket for Saxon later in the year. So, you know, all the old school bands are playing. Might even get to see Judas Priest again, but I think they're only doing two dates in the UK next year on the sort of doing a lot of Painkiller. So there's lots of stuff happening live, loads of stuff there I haven't mentioned. In terms of albums, one in particular I'll point out, I'm looking forward to a New Testament album.
Okay.
Because I've heard good reports about it, as you would do from within the band itself. They sound as if they're doing a much heavier album. Having said that, aren't all Testament albums pretty heavy? You know, they're a heavy thrash band, but it'd be interesting to hear what it's like. Is it going to be along the lines of The Gathering? You know, are they going to get their shit together now and really do a full album of great songs? Because the last few albums, I find, you know, four or five songs are absolutely tip top, right, and then it sort of fades a bit for me. So, you know, I'm holding out hope that they're going to release something that I'll listen to all the way through. I think Europe might be issuing an album next year. As you know, I'm a big fan of Europe, and they've been doing some really good rock stuff in the last few. Who else might be releasing stuff? I haven't really heard a lot about what's definitely coming out. You know, you hear a lot of rumors, don't you? But those are the main ones for me.
Okay. For me, I'm definitely looking forward to a new Anthrax album, which is supposed to be coming out.
Okay.
Joe Holmes just released a single, and that features Mike Borden of Faith No More and Robert Trujillo of Metallica, which, oh yeah, by the way, the three of those guys played together in Ozzy's band for some years. And I think Joe's a very underrated guitarist. And this track, I've scheduled the song, it's called Cross-Eyed Stare, to come out on Patreon this week. The soloing is just ridiculous. Is it on par with the Nuno Betancourt solo that we were all in awe of a year ago when it came out? I wouldn't say it's that over the top, but I think you're going to listen to it and you're going to be like, damn, that's good. It's some good soloing. Listen to a new track from the Wild Hearts. They're releasing an album called Satanic Rites of the Wild Hearts, which, you know, Wild Hearts have always been either absolutely love or just don't get. And I think that's how Ginger's music is in general for me. What else? Shadows Fall released a new single. They're from their comeback album. Looking forward to that. Trying to see if there's anything else here that kind of sticks out to me. Yeah, I guess that's it for now.
Just a couple of rumors, by the way. Okay. A couple of rumors. Thin Lizzy might be playing live with Scott Corum. He's looking to reform a band from some older members. That might be quite interesting if it comes off next year. The rumor, obviously, that Ozzy might be trying to get a formulation of Black Sabbath and ex-Aussie members together and playing live. It was a rumor for this year, but it's also a rumor for next year. That would be exciting if that really came up. Just a couple of things there, which would excite me if it happened.
Yeah, that sounds cool. And actually, Black Label, I think, is supposed to be releasing an album in 2025. That interests me. Testament interests me as well. I'm trying to think of who else. I already have a 2025 playlist going. So,
we're going to have fun from month to month, I think, as we always do. We always think the next year can't be as good as the previous year.
Yeah.
There's always surprises that
come along. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So there's a new album from Lacuna Coil that I'm looking forward to. Arch Enemy, Dream Theater, The Halo Effect, Smith Kotzen, Killswitch Engage, Spirit Box, Ginger. Those are the ones that stick out right now where they've actually released singles already. Excellent. Jeremy, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. A lot of fun as always. Hope the episode was formal or informational for you guys. Informational, is that the right way of saying
it? Yeah.
Informative.
Informative. Yeah,
that's it was informative and it helps you with your year end lists. Always a pleasure, sir. And thank everyone for their support, for watching. And let's see, we've got somebody in the chat all of a sudden as we're trying to say goodbye here. Edgar Winterson, thanks for joining us a few minutes back. Hope you go back and check out the entire episode. Maybe we look forward to having Edgar Winterson on Patreon at some point this year. But anyway, all right, guys. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for all your support. And we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.